being here, and others, you've been here before. And some of you are going back to your home country this week. And so we'll miss Jada, but we appreciate her being here the last few weeks. And we're grateful for everyone being here. You know, sometimes you don't realize what somebody actually does until they're not here to do what they normally do. And so, as you know, Michael and Montel are on vacation, right? Many of you, it is your habit when you walk in the door, you go right to that back table and you grab that sheet of paper that tells you who is sick, what the announcements are, what responsibilities you have in leading. And if you went back there today, you realize there was no sheet and you probably felt lost. Well, I'm sorry. I also felt lost, as you can tell, by Chris having to pull double duty on the Lord's table and the opening prayer. So it just happens from time to time. But we're thankful for everyone who filled in this morning in that. And Michael will be back next week to resume his regularly scheduled programming, the bulletin. But we sang a song a moment ago of "One Man Slept, One Man Cried." And I want to use that for just a moment. The Bible teaches us in many different ways. And one of the ways that Bible teaches us is by contrasting people. You remember in the life of Jesus, he's come into Jerusalem in Matthew 21, and he's had this great triumphant entry. And everyone comes to him and they say, "By what authority do you do these things?" And Jesus begins to rebuke those who are in authority, the scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests, all of those people. He told a parable about two sons. They had a father, and the father said, "Go work in my vineyard," right? And the first son said, "No, I won't go work in your vineyard." But he later repented, and he went and he worked in the vineyard. The second son said, "Yes, Father, I'll go work in your vineyard." But what did he not do? He didn't go work in the vineyard. Which one did the father's will? The one who did. And so you've got one brother contrasted against another brother. This morning I want to look in the Old Testament and I want to see a contrast of two sons. They had the same father but not the same mother. Two sons, and I want to contrast two women. Now you're going to know the story in Genesis 39 probably better than the story in Genesis 38, as the son in Genesis 38 is a man by the name of Judah. And the other son in Genesis 39 is Joseph. Now they are the sons of Jacob, who is also known as Israel. And he had 12 sons. Judah is an important son, as is Joseph. And we're going to see how these two are contrasted to get some lessons for us. At the end of the lesson, I've got four basic applications. But we want to look at these stories. So if you're there in Genesis 38, you'll remember what happened in Genesis chapter 39. In Genesis chapter 37, Joseph, the young son at 17 years old, makes his brothers angry. He's been dreaming these dreams, and he's basically been telling them, "You're going to bow down to me. And by the way, Dad, in the second dream, Dad, you're going to bow down to me." And everyone got mad at him, and so they said, "We're going to kill him." And they said, no, why would we kill him? We won't get any money out of him. Here are these Ishmaelites coming through. Let's sell him. Let's get some money." And so they take him out of the pit, and they sell him to the Ishmaelites. Well, the Ishmaelites then sell him to Egypt. And he is in the house of Potiphar in Egypt in Genesis 39. But here's an interlude in chapter 38. Give with me in chapter 38 about Judah. It happened at that time, Judah went down from his brothers and he turned aside to a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And then Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he took her and he went into her. And she conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Er, however you want to say this. Here's our story of Judah. This is how he gets his wife. The first thing he does is he goes into this Adullamite woman. Turns aside to an Adullamite. Maybe it was a friend. Maybe it's not. But he marries this woman named Shua. They have a child named Er. They have a second son named Onan. Er and Onan are not good men. Er is, in fact, put to death by the Lord. Onan also is killed for his wickedness. Not good sons. But that's not the part of the story I want to focus on. We'll go back more to that. It's how he deals with his daughter-in-law. Because he first gives Ur the firstborn, and then after he dies, he gives Onan the secondborn. And Onan dies. And this is what Judah says to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, as we begin in verse 11. Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, "Remain a widow in your father's house till Shelah, my son, grows up. I'll make a deal with you. Wait a little bit longer, and I'll give you my youngest son. When he gets old enough to marry, I'll give him to you in marriage." And you say, you know what? That's an honorable thing. He's looking out after his daughter-in-law. He's got her back, wants to make sure. But notice why he does this. "For he feared that he," I believe that is Shelah, "would die like his brothers." So Tamar went and remained in her father's house. What did Judah do? He prolonged something that he should have done and disrespected his daughter-in-law. He should have given Shelah to her, but he was afraid that she was the reason that his sons had died. But notice back in verse 10, why they died. "And what he did was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and he put him to death also." It was not Tamar who had caused these men, his sons, to die. It was the Lord. And Judah blamed Tamar. Well, the story goes, Judah's wife died. And if you've ever lost a spouse, you know that it hurts. You cry. And eventually you get over it. And maybe you're ready to move on and date some other people, what have you. I don't know. Never been married. Never had a spouse to die. But you see that happen. Same thing happens with Judah. Notice how verse 12. "In the course of time, the wife of Judah died. And when Judah was comforted, he went up to Timnah, to the sheep shearers, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite." There's his friend again. And he goes with them. And this is what he's told to Tamar. He's going to go to the sheep shearing. "Your father-in-law is going to Timnah to shear his sheep. And so she took off her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil, wrapping herself up, and sat at the entrance of Enaim, which is on the road to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown up, and she had not been given to him in marriage." What's our story? He's going off to shear a sheep. They say, "Tamar, your father-in-law is going," and the idea is go and get revenge. Because she saw that he was old enough, but would not go. So notice what he does in verse 16. "She covered herself," verse 15, "and Judah saw her, and he thought she was a prostitute, for she covered her face. And he turned aside on the road, and he said, 'Come, let me come in to you.'" For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. She said, "What do you give me? That I may come into me, that you may come into me." She said, "I'll send you a goat from the flock." And she said, "If you'll give me a pledge, then I'll send it." And he hands her these jewels. What did he just do? He agreed to a prostitute. Did the prostitute seek him out? Notice how it says that there. He's the aggressor in this matter. He's going along. Now, yes, she did cover herself up to look like that, right? But notice how your text says it there in verse 16. He turned to her. He saw her, yes, but he turned to her and said to her, "Let me come into you." Who is more at fault? Both are at fault, obviously. But he turns to her and says, "Let me come into you." And so he does. And as you might know, what happens with this time, verse 20. He sent this, by the way, and doesn't find her. He goes and he sends his servant, and they can't find this prostitute anywhere in the city. They're looking all over, and they say, "Where's the prostitute who sits by the road?" And the men of the city say, "There is no prostitute." Well, he should have been like, "This is bad." Notice what he tells his friend, verse 23. Judah replied, "Let her keep the things that are own, or we shall be laughed at." What is he worried about? He's not worried about right or wrong. He's worried about being laughed at by everyone in that city, all of the people. Here's what he's worried about. "They're going to laugh at me because I went into this prostitute and I'm looking for this prostitute to pay her back, and everyone knows that I went into a prostitute." And what do you think about men who go into prostitutes? You laugh at them. And you say, "Why would you do that?" He doesn't want to be laughed at. Well, comes out that in the, again, course of time, she recognizes that she is pregnant. So verse 24. After 3 months, about 3 months later, Judah was told, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has been immoral. Moreover, she's pregnant by immorality." She had been wearing widow's clothes. And widows don't be sleeping around with people. But Tamar is now pregnant. And she's not married to Shelah. So therefore, she has to have become pregnant by immorality. So what do you think Judah is going to do? Notice what he wants to do, verse 25. "And she was being brought out. She sent word to her father-in-law by the man..." Oh, excuse me, verse 24 is where it says what he wanted to do. "Moreover, she's pregnant by immorality." And Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be burned." Does that seem a little harsh? Especially given a man who's just gone into a prostitute. He is mighty harsh on this daughter-in-law who has acted immorally. Because maybe there is a personal vengeance there. He feared that his son would also die by her. She had hurt him. And so let me burn her. When the law of Moses comes out in just a little while, the punishment for adultery was not burning. It was being stoned. Burning came from incestual immorality. That's what they burned for. And so there's a question of whether or not this is burn her like we would think burn her at the stake, or like a brand, burn as the scarlet letter, the A in the chest or on the face, to let everyone know this woman is immoral. And I'm not sure which one it is. I lean towards he's probably looking to get back at her. But I don't know that. Nevertheless, he wants something to be done about this. But remember, she's got the pieces. Who's the one who makes her pregnant? Verse 25, she said to her father-in-law, "By the man to whom these belong, I am pregnant." And she said, "Please identify who these are, the signet and the cord and the staff." And I'm sure you can imagine Judah's face when he saw the staff, his ring, and his cord. You know that when you've been busted. Uh-oh. And what does Judah say this time? Judah identified them and he said, "She is more righteous than I, since I did not give her to my son Shelah, and he did not know her again." He realizes this woman who tricked me into thinking she's a prostitute is actually more righteous than me. And he doesn't say because I went into her as a prostitute, does he? Because I did not give her my son. He recognizes she had a just cause against him. she's more righteous than I am. I'll tell you what, I think that happens for us sometimes. Where we start pointing the fingers at people who are doing things that we would never do. Or I should say, we would say we would never do. And then when we do it, we don't recognize that that person is actually better off than us. They're actually more righteous. Now, it doesn't mean that they're right with God. That just means that they acted better on what they knew. They acted more rightly. By the way, Tamar is not an Israelite. She was of a Canaanite. So I don't know if she had been converted to worship the one true God, or if she was worshiping idols, we do not know. But Tamar in this case was more righteous. Now you say, Wes, why you go through this? We know what's interesting about this child that they have. This child's name has twins. Wouldn't you love that? Immorality produces not one child, but two children. And the child that comes out is Perez. Is the one that is most notable. I just want you to hold that in the back of your head. Have twins. And they keep the twins. They go forward. Now, chapter 39, if we're just reading our story, naturally this would pick up. Now, Joseph had been brought to Egypt. And remember, he's sold into the house of Potiphar. And everything is going well with him because the Lord is with him. And Potiphar had put everything under his control in his house. So now let's see about Joseph. Let's pick up at the end of verse 6. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Now, if you're picturing me, that's okay. You don't have to. But Joseph was handsome. And guess who else noticed that Joseph was handsome? Potiphar's wife noticed that Joseph was handsome. And after a time, verse 7, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused. And he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master is no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is great. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Do you notice the difference in this particular story? How Joseph is approached. Well, she sees it. And she cast her eyes, and notice how the text says in verse 7, and after a time. This wasn't the first day he shows up in the house, she shows up too. This is after some time she has done this, and she says, "Come and lie with me." And she has power, and she is important. And it is a woman who is after you. Men, if you've ever had a woman who is important and a woman who is after you, it's hard to say no. But what does he do? He refused. And why is it that he refused? He respected his master. He said, "Look, your master, my master, your husband has put everything under my charge. There's nothing greater in the house than you. How could I do this against you?" Do you feel that strongly and have that much respect for other people? And what they've done for you and what they've put in your... How could I do this against you? Joseph respected his master. But more than respecting his master, what else does he conclude with? He saves the best for last. How can I do this great wickedness against God? It's not just against my master that I'm hurting. It is against God that I would be doing this.
Who is Judah concerned about? Himself being laughed at in front of everybody else. Who is Joseph concerned about? His master not getting caught, but honoring and respecting his master and honoring and respecting God.
And she said, okay, that's fine. That's great. That's your religion. You stick with that. I appreciate you sticking with your religion and your truth and your beliefs. Nope. Verse 10. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. She kept approaching him all the time. And doesn't it work that way? A continual dripping. Where usually a continual dripping gets you to do what you don't want to do, but it's so annoying and it's so nagging that you give in and you just do it. Just to sometimes just get it off your back. He did not. How many times did Judah see that prostitute on the road? One time. And he turned to her. Joseph had this woman approaching him day after day after day, and he never once gave in. And notice how your text says that at the end of verse 10. He didn't lie beside her or to be with her. He made sure he wasn't there. He made sure he was not in a situation where something could be construed. And something could happen. Well, she gives up, right? No, one day that happens. One day, verse 11, when he went into the house to do his work, and notice, none of the men of the house were in the house. They're all alone. Nobody's there. Nobody's going to know. And she caught him. Why would she have to catch him? Because he hasn't been around her. And she caught him and she said, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and he fled and he got out of the house. No way, Jose. Notice that he also left something with the woman. Judah left signet ring, staff, and was going to give her a goat. Given to her. Joseph had his coat taken from him. Well, same evidence. Just as he knew the signet ring was Judah's, the coat is the evidence that Joseph had been there. And Joseph was in the spot. And you know, he was shamed for doing the right thing. Because the wife goes in and she tells the men of the house first. And then she tells the husband and says, look, here's how it went down. And who are you going to believe? A servant or the wife? And Joseph, as you well know, verse 19. Soon as his master heard the words that his wife had spoke to him, this is the way your servant treated me. His anger was kindled, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison in the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Anybody want to sign up for that? Judah was worried about being laughed at. He got laughed at for doing the wrong thing. Joseph gets shamed for doing the right thing. And that's the way it works. In our society, you get shamed if you only sleep with your spouse. And you did not sleep with your spouse until she was your spouse or he was your spouse. You get shamed for that. So we're like Judah. We don't want to be laughed at by everybody, so we just do what everybody else is doing. And we don't respect anybody. We don't respect ourselves. We don't respect God. Or maybe we feel like built up because she's after me. And so, to pet our ego, to pet our desires, we give in to such things. Do you want to be a Judah? Or do you want to be a Joseph? We know what happened to Joseph as the story goes on, don't we? He's in prison for a while, yes. But he is eventually elevated to the second in command in all of Egypt. He saves the whole earth because of God speaking to him and the direction that he gives. Judah has a pretty rough life afterwards. I don't think we want to be Judas. I think we want to be Joseph. Now let's think about these two women for just a second. Now Tamar, as we go back, she had a just cause because she had been mistreated. There was some wickedness that had gone on with her first husband, whatever that is. But I want you to go back to chapter 38. And I want you to see something, maybe one of the most graphic pictures in all of the Bible about this. Of the second son, Onan. The one who is supposed to raise up the descendant for his brother. And so verse 8, Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and perform the duty of a brother-in-law to her and raise up offspring for your brother." So the child that they would have would be on behalf of his brother, or heir. But Onan, verse 9, knew that the offspring would not be his. So that whenever he went into his brother's wife, he would waste the semen on the ground so not to give the offspring to his brother. I don't have to explain that to you adults. You see how mistreated she is? The Lord then in verse 10 puts him to death. And then Judah says, "I'll give you my other son." And I'm sure Tamar is thinking, "Oh great, your first two sons have been garbage." But yet, she still wants the children. And he doesn't give it to her because he blames her for the children. His sons died. She's got a just cause. She had been mistreated. So in verse 14, she doesn't come out and say, "Father-in-law, you really mistreated me. Now sleep with me and give me a child." She hid herself, as the prostitutes do. She covered her face. She changed her garments. She hid herself. And somehow he doesn't know that it is her. He doesn't recognize the voice. I can understand that it could be dark. But he doesn't recognize that it is his daughter-in-law. She doesn't do this very openly. She hides herself. And as we've seen in verse 14, he didn't keep his word. And she's getting back at him. But the problem is, she took revenge into her own hands. "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. But aren't we a Tamar sometimes? We actually have a just reason to be upset about something. And we take matters into our own hands. That's not the way it's supposed to be. God would deal with it. Well, Tamar does this. He goes in, she has the child. Remember that child, Perez, that we talked about? Remember who that is? Remember, there's this kind of important guy. I think his name is Jesus. He comes from Perez. Judah is the seed of Israel, or Jacob, that is chosen to have the Messiah. And it's not Onan or any other son. It is this child that is born in immorality that is a direct father of Jesus the Christ. What if that child had been put to death? What don't we have? I'm sure God would have made a way.
who are we to play God? Wrong situations don't always produce exactly what we want. But God can use that to better us, to build us, and can use that child to accomplish great things. Who are we to play God in that? Tamar had a just cause. And I want you to think about Potiphar's wife for just a second. Potiphar's wife there in Genesis 39, she doesn't hide herself. She comes to him, and it is by her lust that she is driven to ask Joseph, lie with me. Not because Joseph has come onto her. Not because Joseph has done anything. She just sees him as handsome and wants to be with him. That's more like you and me, isn't it, when we try to sleep with someone. It's not usually out of revenge. Could be. But it's because we lust after them. And so she doesn't hide herself. She comes to him open and often. She lays it all out there. There's nothing to hide. Maybe that makes it easier sometimes. I don't know. But she comes open and she approaches him. And as we saw, she accused him unfairly. She comes and said that he said, lie with me. And she makes sure that everybody knows that he said that. She doesn't just tell her husband, but notice in verse 14 of 39, she went to the men of the house first. Now, where were those men at the house on this day? They were not in the house. Did they see him? No. What might have they seen? Maybe they saw Joseph running out of the house. Maybe they did. But she goes and she tells him, look, I got his coat. Same thing when the husband comes on. I've got his coat. People will oftentimes, they will make up things about you and they will accuse you unfairly. And we give them opportunity to do that. Other times people will accuse us unfairly because we did the right thing rather than doing what they wanted us to do. I tell you what, we've got to be willing to take that accusation. We've got to be willing to take that shame and that reproach because not everyone is a good people. That may be bad English, but who cares? Not everyone is looking out for our best interest. And so what did she do, verse 19? She played the victim. This is the way your servant treated me. How dare you do that? Don't we do that? Sometimes we play that victim. Oh, I'm hurt. Oh, I got... And we were actually the one doing the hurt. I want you to think just for a second about these four basic applications. One, we need to be people who keep our word. Judah got into all this mess because he didn't keep his word. And then he compounded it by going into her in the road and all those other things. Liars do not enter the kingdom, but they burn in the second death. When we say and we make our word, Jesus says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything more than this is not from God. We need to be people who keep our word. Judah didn't keep his word. He had promised her. He did not. Now, it's interesting, if you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I'm going to give you a side note. This is free of charge. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, there is a statement that is made about a man not giving his betrothed to a man. Maybe there are times when you can get out of an agreement such as this if it is agreed upon by both parties. This was not agreed upon by both parties. He mistreated her. He should have given the son to the daughter, or explained why he was not going to do so. Secondly, don't be a fool. We go to Proverbs chapter 5, and I want you to see two statements that are made in Proverbs chapter 5. About this woman. And by the way, guys can do the same thing that Tamar and Potiphar's wife did. And the woman can be the one saying, no, no, no. It's not a matter of race, a gender. I want you to see there in chapter 5 of Proverbs of what a father says to his son. Be attentive to my words, because verse 3, the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is as bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword, and her feet go down to death, and her steps follow the path to Sheol, and she does not ponder the path of life, and her ways wander, and she doesn't know it. People can say, they can talk a good game. And they say the things that we want to hear, but we don't think about where it will take us and where we get. She ends in death. You follow down this path, you go there. So don't follow the path. Don't go to this utter ruin, as he would say in verse 14. But verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Meaning, keep it to yourself. Don't be spreading it out all over the place, as he would say earlier, because if you spread it out all over the place, everyone else is going to have your honor. So should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? You just go hand it out to everybody? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the life of your youth. I tell you, don't be a fool. Don't give in. Don't spread it all around. Let it be for yourself. Thirdly, respect. Respect your marriage. It is honorable in the sight of God and all. Respect your wife. Respect your husband. Respect someone else's wife. Respect someone else's husband. Think about it. Don't detach yourself from what it is. It is a vow that you made with your spouse, before God and before others, that you would be together till death do you part, and you would be wholly given to them. Respect that. Respect yourself. Don't spread it. Respect other people. And respect God. That's what 1 Peter 2 says. Love the brotherhood. Honor the king. Fear God. Don't be worried about everybody else. Worry about God. And finally, immorality is indeed wickedness. It is wrong to do. And those who practice such continually and don't repent of that, they will not inherit the kingdom of God. Do not be deceived, is what our two texts that I put on the board say. But we've all made mistakes. And that doesn't mean, you know what, everything is good and everything is right. If I'm still doing it, I don't have a chance. I need to cut it out. Maybe I made a mistake. And that produced a child, just like Judah and Tamar. That child needs to live. That child can do great things for the Lord. Don't just throw it out because it was brought forth in sin. Don't commit the sin. And we don't have to worry about that, do we? But we've done it. Let's change. Let's do right. Let's respect God. Respect others. And let's do what He has, where we keep ourselves pure and devoted for our husband and our wife. Maybe this morning you made a mistake. People don't know about it, or people know about it, and you haven't repented of it, and you're ready to change. Won't you do it this morning? Maybe you're struggling with that. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're struggling with something else. Or maybe you've been doing that, and you say, you know what? I don't want to do it anymore. I want to be a Joseph. I'm going to give my life to Christ. I'm going to devote myself to Him. I'm going to be baptized for the forgiveness of my sins. You're subject to the invitation anyway this morning. We'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we sing.
hearts are hurt.